Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. New 9/11 lawsuit bill, a bid for truth or a paper bowl? We've got that, plus a little good news about the death of the dinosaur media. But first, top gold consumer China launched a yuan-denominated gold benchmark on Tuesday, April 19th, in an ambitious move to exert more control over the pricing of the metal and influence the global bullion market. The benchmark is a culmination of efforts by China over the last few years to reform its domestic gold market, attempting to gain a bigger say in the bullion industry, long dominated by London, where the global spot benchmark price is set. As the world's top producer, importer, and consumer of gold, China has balked at depending on a dollar price in international transactions and believes its market weight should entitle it to set the price of gold. The new benchmark may not be an immediate threat to London, but with time and full convertibility of the yuan, it could become widely used and help China's efforts to boost the global use of its currency. Now, James, I had to look through this a couple of times before I could kind of get straight on what's happening here, and that's why I'm glad I always have your expert economic analysis here. Is this another dollar killer?
Not quite. But it is an important move. What this does not mean is that this is going to in any way impact or change the role of gold in the Chinese monetary system. What it does mean is that China is setting up a mirror to the London gold fix. And people may or may not know that the spot price of gold is not some magic number that comes from heaven. It's not some automatic real-time calculation of all averaging all transactions in the world or anything. It is a price that is set twice a day by the London Bullion Market Association. In fact, five money-making, market-making banks get together every day and do some simulated trading and wizardry, hocus-pocus nonsense and come up with, this is the spot price of gold. And that's officially only the price for the London gold fix, but that's used as a benchmark, so traders around the world use that. Oh, the spot price of gold today is this, so we'll sell for that. That's how that works. And China is just creating a mirror for that in yuan using some Chinese banks, and I believe there's a Swiss bank in that mix as well, doing the same thing, simulated trading or maybe a little bit of trading twice a day to set the price in yuan. This doesn't even mean that all the banks or all the traders in China are going to even use that price. They may still use the London price, but it is an alternative that's been set up. This is just a reflection of the growing role of China in the gold market, in bullion markets generally, and it is a sign that the shift, the focus, the emphasis is really shifting towards the east, towards Beijing, where you would expect, I mean, with a market of over a billion people, and people who are highly motivated to get gold because they know that the yuan can be devaluated at a moment's notice, as we saw last year, there's a lot of interest in this, and it's a big, big, big market. There's a lot of interesting things happening in gold markets this year. It's one of the best years in the gold market since the early 1980s. It is a huge boost to the gold market. Just the fact of China's involvement in all of this, including some of the largest capital outflows in terms of investing in foreign gold mining operations. We've seen huge increases in gold mining stocks this year, probably more to go for people who are looking to make a quick buck. So there you go. This is a pretty important move in the sense that it represents a shift that is happening, but it doesn't actually change anything in particular with regards to the way China's running its yuan.
So speaking of making a quick buck, we have a couple of related stories here. James, you tweeted out the other day, Deutsche Bank settles U.S. gold and silver price fixing litigation. And I noticed today, James, maybe mentioned, and I've talked about it on Media Monarchy before, there's this Simpsons little, you know, fondle slab game that I started to play when I quit smoking and wanted something to do with my hands. And now years later, I still play the stupid thing. But interestingly enough, today they just launched a new update to the game, and it's all about the gold rush. So I found it very interesting to look at gold topping the news today and topping geopolitics and economics. And then I look and yet again, the Simpsons have already kind of done it in there. So our second story this week, James, we continue in some ways, I think, the geopolitical look, but also the behind the scenes moves and who's really doing what with money and what are the real threats and what are the sort of, you know, dressings to actual threats. Obama succumbs to Saudi pressure on the so-called 9/11 lawsuit bill. So following Saudi threats to destabilize the financial system, if the U.S. were to enact a bill that would allow an investigation into Saudi Arabia's support of the September 11th terror attacks, many, of course, were closely watching how Obama would react. The president made it clear. The White House, of course, threatened to veto the bipartisan bill to let families victimized by the 9/11 terrorist attacks sue Saudi Arabia. The White House and State Department are bluntly warning lawmakers not to proceed with the legislation due to fears it could have dramatic ramifications for the United States and citizens living abroad to retaliatory lawsuits. So the president landed in Riyadh 420 today to talk with Saudi Arabia, ostensibly over ISIS and Iran. Then, of course, the big presidential selection clown car had to drive up and get involved in it because the New York primary that was this week, and of course, New York and 9/11. But lastly, from this Zero Hedge article, Saudi Arabia has long denied any role in the 9/11 attacks, but victims' families have repeatedly sought to bring the matter to court, only to be rebuffed after the country has invoked legal immunity allowed under current law. However, as the White House itself admitted, it was the Saudis who were the source of al-Qaeda's seed funding. James, we've seen it kind of bubbling back to the surface, and a lot of it has been brought back up due to the vaunted 28 pages. It's actually going to be the 15th anniversary this year before the presidential selection show happens. So do you think there's any chance we might get any bits of 9/11 truth out of this?
There is a chance, but we're going to have to work for it. There is momentum on the issue because right now, out in the open, a lot of people have now been exposed to the idea that there are people who have been involved in some way with 9/11 and it is being covered up. And so that is now out in the open in 60 Minutes and whatever else is talking about it. Now, of course, as I went over with Dan Dix yesterday on Press for Truth Live, it's a limited hangout, and it does not stop and end with the Saudis. It's not like the Saudis are the masterminds of 9/11, and if you want to find out who's really involved in 9/11, you have to look in who's in bed with the Saudis, and who's covering it up, and what are they covering up, and all of the other aspects of 9/11 that the Saudis couldn't have possibly had anything to do with, like scheduling NORAD drills and rigging WTC-7 to go down and things like that. But this is, at least, the possibility for us to use this as a window, as an of opportunity for people who are now suddenly questioning 9/11 and why are they covering this up. We can bring this and say, hey, look, yeah, this is crazy. Look, they're covering up this. And what else are they covering up? Hey, look at this. Hey, there's a money trail with 9/11? Why did the SEC destroy all the records into 9/11 inside trading? What's going on here? And I think that's the approach that we have to take. This is a window of opportunity. Let's use it in some sort of judo move. Let's use their momentum against them and see if we can at least shake a few more people out of the matrix.
Because I think there are constantly people coming to this and coming to those questions. I think in some ways, James, we can get, I don't know if jaded is the word, but it's 15 years is a long ass time. And we've been talking about it and researching it. And in a lot of ways, all alternative researchers, we've all moved on into all the other different areas that are worthy of investigation. I can be a little pedantic sometimes and repeat things too much, but I'd like to think that that's the radio part in me. There are always people tuning in. There are always people tuning in and are ready and receptive to a lot of these ideas. So hopefully with the 15th anniversary, we will see a lot more 9/11 truth happening. James, I think with all the economic moves going on in Saudi Arabia, kind of tying in the story that we covered a couple of weeks ago, but you mentioned Obama talking to, of course, there was the big 60 Minutes story from a week or so ago, but he actually just talked to PBS before he took off for Saudi Arabia. And he basically said, if we let Americans sue Saudis for 9/11, foreigners are going to start suing the U.S. nonstop. And I did actually do a recent interview with Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. They are in the middle or probably around the tail end of a tour around the Pacific Northwest. So again, everything we say and play always included in the show notes below. You can get those and click through and get to all the sources of all the stories that we get for you each week on New World Next Week. James, a little bit of good news perhaps for our third and final story on this 266th episode. New poll shows only 6% of people trust the mainstream media. It's been eroded by perceptions of inaccuracy and bias, fueled in part by American skepticism about what they read on social media. So, James, this story is coming from the Associated Press, and this polling was actually done by them and a couple of other media groups. Just 6% of people say they have a lot of confidence in the media, putting the news industry about equal to Congress and well below the public's view of other institutions. In this presidential campaign year, Democrats were more likely to trust the news media than Republicans or independents. Faced with ever-increasing sources of information, Americans are also more likely to rely on news that's up-to-date, concise, and cites expert sources or documents, according to a study by the Media Insight Project. So about 6 in 10 Americans watch, read, or hear news several times a day, as computers, smartphones, and tablets make it easier for people to follow the news on an on-demand basis. They say a majority of people get news from social media, most frequently by Facebook, by far and away. So James, again, included in the notes will be the links to the full PDF with all the methodology and how this was put together. But it seems to me, in some ways, at least on the top part, the takeaway is sort of, Paul says most people are getting their news from Facebook and that's why they don't trust it. Am I wrong to put that, James?
No, I don't think so. And they shouldn't trust it, of course, because we've seen in the past about Facebook admitting that they'll tamper with your news feed to see if they can adjust your happiness level and all that kind of nonsense that they're doing. So yes, you should not trust if you're relying on Facebook or any other kind of controlled platform like that to choose your news, select what news you should be looking at. I mean, clearly. But then again, I mean, people turn on the TV. Well, that, of course, that's all controlled. I mean, some editor at some level is deciding what you are or not going to see every night. So, again, it's the only part that we can say here is to triangulate from different sources and to be active in your searching of information and active with your critical thinking when it comes to what information you're receiving. What's the source of this information? How do I know that this is, you know, how can I trust this? And that goes for the alternative media as well. There's no spotless, blameless, perfect, 100% always right source of information. It's a question of triangulating from different sources. And so I like to think that polls like this are showing that people are becoming more savvy, at least becoming more aware of the fact that, yeah, this isn't quite right. We're being lied to. That is a step forward. I mean, the next step is becoming more savvy in how do I actively, proactively go out searching information and verifying information. But the first step is to know you're being lied to, and we are getting there. So we've been charting this for years here on New World Next Week. I'm sure we've done 4 or 5 different polls like this over the years, and it shows that trust is eroding, and the mix of where people are getting their news is changing. Television continues to be the number one source. I can't imagine why, but it is eroding, and other sources like the internet are surging. So that is a helpful sign as well, because again, you're more likely to get information that you can rely on, or at least that you can do something with when you're getting it from, you know, the internet, where you can source to directly to information rather than just being programmed by some television station manager somewhere.
Well, and I think that's really the key. I think, like this article points out, I like that it says, like, you know, people want, like, documentation and you know, proof and stuff. And I think that that's what the alternative media, what we've tried to do in our own small way of this, have always saying, like, we've got the reports. We've got the links for you. Go read more of yourself. And again, we share all this information. So in that spirit, we will include the links to that full report that's called A New Understanding: What Makes People Trust and Rely on News. The other bit of good news next week, James, is the latest episode of Good News Next Week I published earlier, and it's called Jury Nullification for the Win. And some of the other hashtag New World Next Week headlines we are following: Mitsubishi admits rigging emissions test data. So we can add that, James, to our cover story from last fall when Volkswagen was busted for essentially doing the same thing. Our buddy Brock West tweeted Thailand asking foreigners for bank account, social media, and hangout details. And lastly, James, you at Corbett Report tweeted out the other day, old CFR Clooney raised $15 million for Hillary in the DNC. And then the next day on news tried to denounce big money in politics. But they actually, I think, kind of called him out, and he had to sort of backpedal and go, okay, yeah, I admit it. It's a lot of money, and a lot of money is really gross. But I think it, again, becomes so painfully obvious in a lot of ways of sort of who's what and what's what, because you can see a lot of it by the fruits, James. So hopefully our fruits will go a long way in being involved with this. And again, I do a live couple of shows every day via MediaMonarchy.com as I am attempting to become a purely listener-supported outlet. We can keep it going.
Well, thank you for sharing those fruits from the flowering tree of Media Monarchy, and thank you to all of those out there who are watering that tree. And let's continue to do it. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, man. Thanks.